I certainly think also Michael Olise has had a wonderful start. The Bundesliga is really falling in love with him and just seeing how talented he is. And I think people who watch the Premier League knew that. It's a new thing for Bayern Munich fans.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
This is Off The Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Right, Lara Gillespie, Irish cyclist, is with us. Good morning to you, Lara. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you.
What is your off-season like? Do you have an off-season?
Yeah, these are my 2 weeks off-season.
Right.
And I was literally looked into my soul from my coach who told me don't do anything for 2 weeks.
Right.
Not even gym, nothing. So really trying to rest.
And how is that? Does it make you a little anxious that you're not doing it?
Yeah, definitely. It's a weird feeling, but definitely needed, because then once I take the rest, then my body kind of shuts down and is like, whoa, you really need a rest. So
it's been a wild year, I suspect. You kind of obviously had big plans, but it seems like this is your breakthrough year in many ways. You go from like not being on the main squad to being on the main squad to going to the Olympics to winning medals at the World Championships. It's kind of ridiculous. Have you thought about it just yet?
I have. And I think that's true to say it's a breakout year, but I've just been in this like constant steady progression because, yeah, I came from having injury and illness for a few years to like, so you're basically at the bottom, so you can just keep developing, keep getting better. So I'm just excited that I hope that trajectory keeps going that way.
Yeah, no doubt. Can you take us back a year and tell us what you thought was likely to happen? So you were, can you explain maybe a bit for, there's tiers in professional cycling where there's like the Grand Tour team, and to make that you kind of have to prove yourself, and that kind of happened for you in the middle of the year, is that right?
Yeah, so it's for the road, there's like the continental teams and then there's the World Tour teams. So I was riding for a continental team, which was the development team for the World Tour team. The World Tour team is basically the team that goes to the Tour de France and those kind of races. There's, for me, the Tour de France wouldn't be what I'd be aiming for because I'm not that type of rider, but eventually maybe I could be. But there's other races that are at that same level that I'd be targeting.
More day classics type thing?
Yeah, one day classics like Strade Bianche or Paris-Roubaix. Those kind of races would be more suited to me. So it is about finding yourself in the continental. It's still professional sport, but it's just there's one higher level. So now I'm at that higher level, which I signed during the summer just before the Olympics.
And how do you prove yourself at continental that you're ready for World Tour? What do you need to do?
Once you just start winning races at those, like there's basically the highest level that you can do at that level. So it's called a 1.1. And they're also like classic type races, and you're still racing against World Tour riders. So if you're beating the World Tour riders, then
you're ready for the World Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, you just said there, the Tour de France and those stage races isn't necessarily automatically in your future, but it might be. Explain the difference between what type of cyclist you are. If you're a one day, are you a sprinter?
Yeah, I'm more of a sprinter. So I'm also a track rider, which is what I went to the Olympics for. So that's another part of my juggling of my dual career. So I'm more of a sprinty type rider. I can do the higher power, but then I also I'm too endurance to be a full sprinter.
Right.
But I'm not endurance. I'm not like a climber who can just climb for 3 hours uphill. So yeah, in a Tour de France, there's still sprint stages that you can win and target, and I can still help the GC rider. But eventually, I could develop into being a GC rider. For example, the world champion right now, she was kind of more of a sprinter, puncher type rider like I am right now. And she's kind of developed more as she got older into a more GC rider, which is the general classification.
Is Bradley Wiggins' career trajectory something also?
Yeah, similar. Yeah, he was on the track and then became more yellow jersey.
And how do you become more of a climber? I mean, apart from like doing lots of climbs?
Well, it's also just to do with your physiology and how you develop. And especially for women, we develop more as you become into your 30s. And like the world champion for years was like 38 years old. So your aerobic capacity as a woman develops as you get older.
Right.
And you lose more like of your body fat as you get older. So your physiology just changes. So it also depends what you focus on and how you adapt.
It seems like the calendar is kind of set up to allow you to try and do a little bit of everything. So you can be track, you can spend summers on the classics and hopefully the tour and then go back to, is that how it works?
Yeah, it's not set up perfectly because, as I said, I only get 2 weeks off. I started my season last year around this time a few weeks ago, and then I only finished just 1 week ago. So right. It is pretty full on. Whereas if you only did road, you would only start in maybe March, maybe in January for one race, and then you could finish in September. So, it's about prioritizing where your goals are. And for me, the track is a big goal because I can do that higher power and I really enjoy the adrenaline that the track brings and the opportunities to go to world championships and Europeans and to race at the highest level is more often than what you can do on the road.
On the speed riding over endurance, do you learn which you're more suited to by trial and error, or is it pretty instant that you know?
It's pretty obvious. Like if I was to sprint against a 40 or 50 kilo girl, they can only do maybe 500 watts less than what I can do. Whereas then if we went on to a climb, they can obviously climb a lot faster because I'm like 20 kilos more than them. So yeah, it's pretty obvious. But also what my coaches keep saying to me, well, you keep surprising us, because earlier in the year I won a race where I won as a solo breakaway and won by like 10 minutes or something. So then they're like, oh, you're not just a sprinter. And then you keep learning more about yourself. So I think there's lots more to discover.
Can you talk us through the feeling of winning the bronze at the World Championships? I'm always so fascinated talking to athletes when it comes to medals and the difference in euphoric levels that everyone has. Some people are, you know, some people can almost feel down, a bit deflated or relieved, yeah. And some people are elated like they've never been before.
Yeah, I was disappointed because I felt I could have won.
Yeah.
And I went into that week knowing how good I felt, how strong I was, and I just kept getting a bit closer. And then I started to not feel so good during the week. And so it was my last opportunity to win because I raced four times and I came fifth in one. I came, I don't remember the other ones, seventh in another one. So I was like, okay, I really need to bring something home, because also in Europeans, in elite Europeans in January, I got 3/4, and that was like, what the hell? Like,
yeah.
I'm not even bringing any medal back to show anything. And also for me, coming third is kind of like coming fourth because I just want to win. So it is that kind of like, you always want to be better, but I can still appreciate that this is where I am. I'm where I want to be, as in I'm fighting for a medal. I'm with the people who I'm looking up to and who I have looked up to over the last few years. And I'm like sprinting against them and it's not easy for them. So I'm making it hard. So that bit is really satisfying. But then I think every athlete has it where you're just like, oh, I was so close, or oh, I knew what mistake I made there, or I'm just excited for the next opportunity. I think I'm going to win. So
the psychology derived from these like physical exploits is never endingly fascinating for me. Like, I think there's a whole book on athletes finishing fourth behind that. But when you say the disappointment of collecting bronze, I always think from the outside in, it was like, I'd like bronze. Silver would wreck my head.
Yeah, it also depends on how you win. Because, for example, in the sprint, like in the sprint event on the track, to win, you're racing first against second and third and fourth. So then you'd lose gold if you get silver, but then you win bronze if you come third. So like the whole psychology there, everyone would hate to lose the gold and then get silver. They'd rather win a bronze. But the way I won my bronze was by attacking and being really brave and being like a bit ballsy and going for it. So then it's like, I actually won that. Like, I took the risk and it paid off. So no, I was really happy and it was so nice to have my family and all the coaches, and really that's a big deal for Ireland and a big deal for us, and not something that I can be actually disappointed with, but it's more, you just always want more.
Of course, yeah. Because I imagine with the timeline events that day was, okay, initial disappointment to not winning.
Yeah.
But then you realise as the hours progress, no, the tactics I deployed was me.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was standing on the podium and it was in Denmark and Copenhagen, and a Denmark lady won and she was retiring and her baby was crawling along the floor, and it was like the whole crowd was singing their national anthem and it was like goosebumps. And I was like, okay, this would have been a bit awkward if someone else won, because it was really powerful when she won, and it was a cool podium to be a part of. So, you know, there's highs and lows and you have to take whatever it is. And I think you always learn more when that happens. And then hopefully there'll be a period of time when I can collect all these thirds, fourths, fifths and be winning.
Definitely better than fourth, right? That third.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, because that's the, like, generally There are studies that show finishing second and fourth are the worst, winning and finishing third. You're not quite in the making peace with the bronze stage of your career yet, which is great.
I think, for me, coming second and third is still not enough, and you're always still wanting to be first. But for everyone else, I think bronze, like, who writes an article saying, it's so much easier to write, oh, they got a bronze medal, or they're on the podium, where, like, coming home and I can show my sponsors, you can actually bring a physical thing.
Yeah.
Whereas when you come fourth, it's a bit deflating.
I did really well. I'm fourth in the world, and
So, and I think that also depends on different sports and how it's described and everything. But I think still, if you come fourth in the world, if I was a year ago telling myself that you'd be fourth or third, it'd be amazing. So
yeah, absolutely. I remember talking to one of the rowers at the Olympic Games, and there was the Champions Parade. I don't know if you saw that down by the Eiffel Tower. They had this thing where there was a big hype thing, and all the medalists got to hang out with each other. And I think it was Dara Lynch was saying the difference between winning a medal here and not winning a medal here. Like, we've come back from World Championships with medals, and it doesn't register. But the Olympics is just on this completely different scale. The velodrome wasn't in the middle of the city the way everything else was. Did you experience the Olympics?
No, not at all. And it was just felt like any other World Championships. And I think that's on a good thing. On a good note, it's good for performance and you're staying in the zone. But on another note, when you come back, everyone's like, oh, how were the beds? How was this? I'm like, I actually didn't go into the food hall. I didn't go.
Wow.
I was there for 2 hours because my event was literally the last event of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I went straight from the velodrome, and we had to quickly get changed into our outfits, and then we were in the parade.
Ceremony.
Yeah,
right.
And then so I was in the village for a total of maybe 45 minutes.
My God.
And then I got to sleep there for the night after the, but we didn't, we had like 2 hours sleep, so.
Right. Well, it sounds like you had a good night.
Yeah, no, it was good. And I still really enjoyed the experience, and I'm already so excited for the next Olympics. But yeah, it's crazy how everyone sees the Olympics as way bigger than the World Championships, when we're just racing against all the same people in this, doing the same races, doing the same events. But I also found that really powerful, because you can really see when we came home, when we did the like parade, when everyone came to
GPO.
It was just so cool to feel the energy, and then you really feel like, oh, sport is really impactful, and Irish people really appreciate the sport and the Olympics. And I think it was nice to feel really proud to be Irish. And I think, that's something really special. So even though everyone sees it in a different way, it's also quite nice that it has this special effect.
So you didn't actually totally feel the benefit of the team until the end. As in, because talking to some of the others, and the rowers weren't staying in the village either, but certainly some of the athletes felt like they were part of a big collective. And there was this sense that there's a new generation of Irish athletes who are really confident and they're on the world stage. And actually, speaking to you in the velodrome after the first qualifier, before, when you'd reached you hadn't qualified as the team at the start, you were still ready to go for the rest of the week and speaking very confidently about, I'm totally here to compete. And as that proved at the very end, we were saying that you're part of a continuum of young Irish athletes like Whiffen, who was obviously on his own scale of confidence. But Mona McSharry was very confident, and there was a few others who were coming. We're wrong about that. You weren't all talking to each other and kind of feeding off each other, or were you?
No, we weren't in person, but I think Team Ireland and the media and everything, like, we were still seeing what was going on. We were still seeing the Instagram posts and hearing the interviews, and I still felt part of it, and I still was really inspired by everyone. And I know,
because you sounded
I know most of them,
okay.
And I feel like we're all kind of on this rise together. Like, I went to the Youth Olympics with Rashida and Sarah Healy, and so I feel like I'm still part of their little journey, and we're all kind of doing it together. So I think even though we weren't in there together, I can't really imagine, even if we were all in the village together, that there would have been the time to all together and eat together and be thinking all this.
I would have thought that too, but I guess it's when you put it down to 45 minutes during the Olympics. Because I get the sense that when you came home to O'Connell Street in Dublin, you felt it. But at the time, like I was going to ask you there, like, do you almost feel almost left out because of the excitement with the likes of Mona McSharry and Rashid Adeleke and Daniel Whiffen?
In an Irish way, a little bit probably, but I think that's also to do with cycling in general. It's a smaller sport and we kind of have that feeling anyway, I think, because we don't get to train here. We don't get to train here and we don't get, you know, the same kind of exposure that maybe like a Gaelic sport would get or, you know, some of those other sports.
That's your coach saying you're doing too much activity. You're going into town, your day off, you're supposed to be resting. Yeah.
It was we that you had to be there with you off the back of the Olympic Games, like, and it already feels like a lifetime ago, and yet, like that, I think that it caught the whole country up, like, because it was so special. Because we got early success in it, I think.
It was really cool, and I think Irish sport is definitely growing, and those smaller sports are getting the highlight in the time now. So that is really cool to be a part of, and I think it's only going to get better.
What's the plan for the next year? What's the perfect year look like if you're back here sitting down Halloween 2025?
I really want to get a good hit out on the World Tour team and get those classic rides in, and because really everyone is kind of at my age is a bit more advanced than I am, as in they've all had a few years at this level. So I'm really excited to get that exposure and to learn how to race them, and then hopefully the next year on I can be a performer and be a winner in those type of races, and then. Yeah, also get some wins on the road in other races. And there's European Championships going on in January in Belgium. So I really want to get some medals there.
That's on the track.
Yeah, on the track. And then the World Championships are, again, same time next year. So I'd really want to be performing highly there.
Your bounce into the public's consciousness is happening at almost exactly the same time as we're finally going to get a velodrome. Now, I don't know when the exact date it's going to be finished. You probably have a better idea than the rest of us. What will that do to your ability to compete on the world stage, having a velodrome in Dublin?
I think for me, it won't change so much, but I think it will help just the whole next generation, and we can actually... Because for us, we do have to train internationally anyway, because we have to go to Mallorca, we have to go to somewhere in Spain to train in the sun anyway, because like we train 5 hours a day outside. If you're training in Irish weather, you can't, it's way harder and you get sick, and it feels like doing 10 hours. But for the winter training and for, having that group training, and I think bringing up more younger riders, having more people to race against when you're at home or just train with, it's going to be phenomenal. And I'm really excited for the next, I think it'll be in 10 years when we see that like really pay off. So it's more about having more numbers, more competitivity within the team and competition within training, within the squad to get the spots. I think that'll bring on everything, and we actually get to race more, because for me I get to race at a world championships, at a European championships. You're always against a world champion or like a legend of the sport. You never get to just develop that racing instinct the way I did when I was a runner, and I could just, you know, run on the track every weekend or run in cross country or even on the hockey pitch. You learn how to play because you're doing it all the time. Whereas for us, we have to go and perform on a world stage. So that'll make the biggest difference when we can actually race at home.
We should probably just explain to people that you didn't grow up as a cyclist. You were a runner first and a hockey player. And then how did you end up being scouted or discovering that you had a talent for cycling?
Yeah, I really just did every sport. Sport was my life growing up just for fun. I just loved it. I did soccer, dancing, like everything I could. And Enniskerry was such a good place for that. It's such a hub for all the kids. We like all walk from each sport to, like, on a Saturday, we're all doing three different sports. And I always did a bit of mountain biking. And then when I was in transition year, I thought I was joining a mountain biking club, but I joined Orwell Wheelers, which is a road club.
Right.
And then they said, oh, here, just take this bike and go on a race. And I was like, it's not really what I wanted, but okay. And I crashed and I was so bad. And then I was like, I'm not good at this. The next race I have to win. I got so competitive. So then I trained a little bit on the road and also was still running. And then the next race I was a bit better. And then the next race I did, I won and I got selected for the Youth Olympics. And I was training
after three races.
Yeah. Wow. But the scene is quite small in Ireland, and I was like physically strong. I just had no idea what I was doing because the running to bike really complements each other. So I got selected for the Youth Olympics and went for cycling instead of running. And then I won a medal at the Youth Olympics. So then I was like, oh, maybe I'll keep doing this. So every summer I went back to cycling after, because in the school year I was just playing hockey and running.
Right.
And then every summer I did like a European Championships and I just won medals each year. And I was like, oh, maybe. But I had no idea you could do it professionally. I had no idea all the people I was against were only doing cycling and already had these contracts for when they were 18, 19, 20 years old. So yeah, it was really step by step and in the moment. I wasn't planning.
So you finished your degree before you went pro? Or
so I got on the senior track team just as I finished my leaving cert.
Right.
And I went to UCD then at the same time, but everyone was like, what are you doing? No one does that. No one does college and cycling. Like, it's really impossible. But anyway, then COVID happened. So then we had the whole year and I did my degree and then I got sick for 2 years. So then I didn't get to compete. So then last year was my first time pro and I was graduated as well. So.
Right. Okay. It's incredible. In retrospect, it's a good idea to have a degree as well as being, because it's not like you're going to earn millions and millions and millions in the next couple of years. Maybe eventually the money catches up.
Actually, you'd be surprised. Women's cycling is getting there and it's getting really, really promising. And you can definitely make a living off cycling now, but yeah, maybe not millions and millions and millions.
It's a really inspiring message for young people to try loads of different sports because you just don't know what you're going to be good at. Like
yeah.
In your case, you're getting the brands of the worlds and you're at the Olympics.
Yeah.
You didn't even realize it about riding.
Exactly. And I remember when I was in school, I was running around the playground and I said, I'm going to be in the Olympics. And I really didn't know what sport. I really just loved doing sport. And I just had that competitive and just, I just for some reason thought I would just go or knew I would go. But I didn't know for what sport.
Would it be fair then to say like it wasn't necessarily a natural love of cycling itself because you crashed that first time, but it was, there was something about you that there was the competitive instinct that was probably, you were probably aware of that was within to that point, but you didn't realise that cycling brought out the best of it.
Yeah, I think so, because I do, like even now my body just wants to go running, or I want to go play hockey, but I just love all sport. And I think, yeah, it could have been any sport and cycling just kind of hit. I was good at it. And then I also really find the training part of it, not like I find it easy because I'm just going out and okay, it's my work, but I get to explore for like 4 hours. I'm really just enjoying every moment. So it's not like a chore.
You mentioned the mountain biking initially. Is that yeah. gone now?
No, when I'm at home, I'm always on the mountain bike.
Really?
But like for training, it's nearly all on the road. But when I'm at home, I'm always on the mountain bike. I was actually buying a mountain bike yesterday. So just for Christmas period, because really it's so, where I live is so perfect for mountain biking.
Right.
And for me, being off the road and in the forest and in the trees, it's just, it's my happy place.
Kind of dangerous for you now as a professional athlete to be like hopping over the mountains and...
Yeah, if I got injured, I would be in trouble.
I was going to say.
I don't take risks and I'm quite calculated and I know the routes that I go on. So
Kevin
yeah.
Moran used to sneak home from Man United and play Gaelic football. And then eventually when he ended up battered and bruised one time, he had to tell them what had been happening.
Yeah. No, we have...
Is this a secret with...
No. For mountain biking, it's okay. But we have contracts saying no dangerous sport. Like we're not allowed to do dangerous sport, but road cycling is probably the most
dangerous
sport
anyway,
of
yeah.
them all. Yeah. So I think also mountain biking, it really helps with your skills. And anyway, when a lot of my road races are kind of half off road with the cobbles and on the mud, and so you need to be able to deal with those different conditions. So it's not a bad thing.
You're on a 2 week down period now, as much rest as possible,
yeah.
instructed.
Yeah.
Would you ever go for a leisurely cycle?
Like, well, I'm not allowed.
Down to the shops or anything? Or it would never occur to you?
Do you know where I live? Because where I live, when I have to get like out of my house, it's like this. It's like a 90 degree angle to get up. I have to do 600 watts to get to the top of my drive. And then if I wanted to cycle to the shop, then I'd cycle down the hill and then it's a 30 minute cycle back up the hill. So there's no easy cycling in the Wicklow Mountains.
Do you think that has an impact on your like, did you always live there?
Yeah, I do think. And I all the kids that grew up in my valley were all like competitive athletes. Like
right.
one of the girls was on the hockey team. All the lads were runners. And I think it was like we were always having to hike up these hills and our calves are strong. And everyone was like, well, it must be something in the water. But I think it's just we all cycled to school. We were all running through the fields. So
I'm obsessed with hills in Irish sports history. So Sonia O'Sullivan in Cove, it's incredibly hilly. You talk to Ronnie Delaney and he talks about running to school, but there's a specific hill that he talked about running up on the way into school. You talk to the horse trainers and they all have hills naturally, like the O'Brien's original place has this big hill. I'm like, I think there's something in forcing Irish kids to run up hills that's going to do us well in future.
I think so. Well, I think just having outdoor kids, outdoor lifestyle is beneficial for everyone. And yeah. Forcing your kids to run to school, or is that not forcing them?
I know, force them. I agree. Yeah.
And just being outdoors instead of being on the screens and doing whatever. So I think it does make a difference when you have that kind of active lifestyle.
Well, listen, Lara, congratulations on a brilliant 2024. Yeah. Here's to whatever's next. Thanks a million for coming
into
us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.